Hello, this is News Director Larissa Donovan, and joining me on the phone for this interview is candidate for Mayor George Prince. How's it going today, George?
I am doing great. How are you?
Oh, just peachy. Why don't we start by, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, like how long you've been in Bemidji?
Sure. So I've been in Bemidji the majority of my life. My family moved here back in 1976 when I was 5 years old because my dad is from the area. This is where he grew up. And so we moved from California here, and I went through elementary school, middle school, high school, and later on college at Bemidji State University. So there were a couple of years there where I was traveling around other parts of the state, starting businesses and such. But I'd say for a good solid 40 years, I've been a member of this community.
And what kind of roles in the community you've served? I know you're with Lavalley Industries. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do there?
Sure. So I'm a part owner here at Lavalley Industries, and I also serve as our chief financial officer. But we're a relatively small firm. We're about 35 people here. And so, you know, when you're a smaller firm, you wear a lot of hats. So I do a lot of contract negotiation. I do a little bit of marketing. I serve as our human resource person in addition to overseeing all of our financial decisions. So it's a pretty broad role. As far as the community goes, I've been involved in a lot of different things over the years. Most recently, I just finished a term as chairman of the Occupational Development Center, which many people in Bemidji will know is a nonprofit organization that helps people with disabilities develop their skills and find employment opportunities, as well as assisting other people with barriers to employment. I've also served on the Bemidji HRA and was a commissioner there and helping with low-income housing until not too long ago. I serve as our church treasurer, and I'm involved in a lot of different civic things as they come up as a volunteer here or there. So no surprises in a small community like Bemidji. We all tend to wear a lot of hats.
Well, I'm surprised you're finding the time to campaign this year. What made you want to run for mayor this year?
Well, first off, I did run back in 2014, 6 years ago, because there were a lot of things that were happening in the city that were of great concern to me. And, you know, as the last 6 years have clicked by, I will tell you, I haven't seen a lot of improvement in many of the things that concern me. And then this year, particularly when we look forward, you know, the city is going to be tasked with making a lot of very critical and important decisions that are in large part going to determine the kinds of opportunities that our citizens and people are going to have moving forward, in addition to the tax burden that they're all going to have to carry. And when I look at these things, I believe our city really needs great vision to get through this and really focused and inclusive decision-making if we're all going to come out on the other side in a successful place.
So my next few questions are on some of those things concerning the tax burden, such as half of the city is non-taxable land and properties, about half, I should say. So a significant burden to operate the city falls on the remaining city property taxpayers. What solutions have you thought of that might solve this problem?
Well, I think you've got a number of things happening. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is we just have to do a better job of developing our local economy. In particular, I'm very interested in taking steps to try to diversify our economy so that we have more manufacturing base here and more firms that are rooted in high technology. You know, if we could continue to build that out, specifically in the industrial park and other, you know, similar areas, we're able to increase our tax base. Additionally, we have a lot of property down by the Sanford Center that was intended to be developed quite some time ago, and it would be great to see that property developed and put on the tax rolls, which would just increase the amount of property that can be taxed. I think the other thing that we have to look at as well is, you know, other forms of being able to raise revenue in our city. So, you know, when we start talking about lodging taxes and things like that, those are all different ideas that have been put forth, which are really more user-based taxes, so that some of that tax burden shifts from just the property owners but to the people that are actually utilizing service. So there's been a lot of different ideas put forth there that I think are worthy of investigation. And last but not least, you always have to look at the cost side of things. You know, are we doing things the most efficient way possible within the city, from our operations to some of the other financial decisions we're making? Because as we, you know, can be more efficient in what we do, we can reduce the amount of money that we spend. And as we do that, that in turn will reduce the tax burden on property owners as well.
All right, my next question is on the Highway 197 business corridor, you know, where it kind of juts off west. I'm sure you know. MnDOT plans to work on that stretch of highway in a few years, and the plan for multiple roundabouts was famously scrapped, and they're back to the drawing board. What are your thoughts on what should happen with that corridor?
Well, I think, you know, that is a huge community conversation, and I think in part of the reason it wasn't successful last time is because we didn't have that good community conversation up front. And so, to me, I would be very interested in hearing from all the parties that would be affected by that project and really understanding what their main concerns are in building a coalition as decisions are being made, because we don't want a repeat of what happened last time.
All right. My next question is on the city's drinking water. The city's water system needs an expensive fix, and the wastewater treatment facility is probably going to need a pretty big fix very soon, too. And without legislative bonding dollars or a sales tax, that burden will likely fall to the utility ratepayers. What are your thoughts on the project to improve the city water and possible funding solutions?
Well, first and foremost, you know, having clean water is not like an option. We have to have clean water for our citizens. So it's a decision that has to be made, and in fact, in part, already has been by the City Council. Earlier this month, they passed, the resolution to move forward with this project and approved approximately $7 million in spending, and that was done without having the state bonding in place, which means if that doesn't go through, which is a very big unknown right now, that's potentially going to end up being an anywhere from 16 to 20% increase in the water fees, which is huge. That's huge. And that's phase one of a two-phase project. So looking forward, that could be even worse. And then when we start talking about the wastewater treatment plant, we have yet to, you know, get our new license over there to fully understand what the new standards for discharge are going to be. And, you know, the number I keep hearing kicked around is $16 million, which could be another 20% increase in sewer fees. So you're talking about very substantial increases. So I do think that there are a couple of strategies here. You know, the first is there's been a significant amount of money approved for local communities through the CARES Act as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think we really need to study that funding to see whether or not we have the ability to potentially tie at least the wastewater treatment plant project to it to assist. So that's a big thing. I think the other thing we potentially have to look at is a private-public partnership. It could be that potentially we might be able to find a way to have a private party build some of this and then perhaps lease it back. Now, am I saying that's the for sure answer? No. But I think when you start talking about, you know, 20% hikes, each in potentially your water and sewer fees, you have to start getting creative and looking at other potential options and putting all the solutions on the table to sort through.
All right. My next couple of questions are on some current events. Recent events in the city and the state have highlighted the issues of racism and distrust of the government. What would you do as mayor to improve race relations and trust?
Well, when you say relations, you know, where my mind immediately goes to is relationships. That's how a lot of anxiety and tension is reduced and trust is increased. And that's because most people struggle with understanding other points of view that are different than theirs, especially when the experiences are different. And so I've always been a big fan of putting people together from varied backgrounds working on different problems together, because as they do so, not only are they problem solving, they're getting to know each other as people. And I think that's a really important step. And I put forth the idea that I would like to create several citizen task forces that would work specifically on some of the issues that you've just brought up. You know, whether it's understanding how to better fund the Sanford Center, how to tackle some of our financial issues with the wastewater treatment plant or homelessness, we have a lot of very talented, bright, and creative people in our community, and I would be very interested in getting them engaged in helping us come up with solutions for problem solving, and in doing so, I think bridge some of those racial divides, some of those cultural divides. And so I'm very, very committed to getting more of the community involved and working on solutions.
All right, my last question is on COVID-19. While many businesses are beginning to reopen to closer to normal, what do you think the City Council's role should be in a public health emergency?
Well, obviously the city has a duty to coordinate with both the federal and state government to roll out different things as they become, you know, available. So coordination is a big role for the city, but I also think there are things the city could be doing internally as well, potentially looking at, you know, who are our higher risk populations, and is there a way that we can, you know, have a ready standby list to get those people assistance if they need it. Again, when we're dealing with homelessness, there was a time when I wasn't sure how those folks were getting resources because so many things like the programs that are there to help them with meals and different things, and even the Wolf itself was shut down. So I think when you look at some of the populations within the city, I think the city has an obligation to look at how they can bring more resources to bear to help them out. And that also goes back to the financial issues the city has been facing. When the city doesn't have a surplus, it has very limited financial flexibility on how it can react to crisis like COVID-19. So this is the current crisis we're dealing with, but what will be the crisis that we have to deal with in a year or 5 years? And we need to be better prepared as a city for when that happens and hopefully have some more financial flexibility so that the city can be of greater assistance.
All right. Well, George, that takes care of my prepared questions. Is there any other issue that you wanted to be sure we touched on before we wrap this up?
Yeah, you know, I think there are a couple of things. You know, I'm very, very focused on, you know, diversifying the economy, and we touched on it. But, you know, right now, looking at the most recent census data, we have 27.2% of the population within the city limits that lives in poverty. That's incredible. One out of four people live in poverty. That's not okay. When you look at the median income, it's $34,000, and it has not changed much in the last 10 years. When you look at $34,000 as a median, that means half of the city makes less than $34,000 in a household income. That in part explains why we have 27% living in poverty. So we have to find new opportunities, new jobs, new employment situations for folks to be able to make improvement in those areas. And that's before we even talk about the people who are underemployed, who are working positions that are actually several skill sets below what they're capable of, but it's simply the best our community has to offer right now. So for me, when I think about a vision for Bemidji, it's tackling that poverty problem head on. And we have a bunch of subsets of that problem, including homelessness. You know, if you walk downtown and you see what's been going on there over the last, you know, 6 to 10 years again, you just see an increase in a homeless population. And that's just a tragedy, and it's not something that our city should be okay with. So, you know, when I think about the other issues that are hanging out there, that's a pretty big one, as is the Sanford Center. You know, we have a $500,000 a year operating deficit over there. We have a $750,000 capital improvement budget that was requested just last year that we weren't able to fulfill. As that building ages, it requires more and more maintenance. So, you know, now you're potentially looking at over $1 million a year that you have to push into that facility. And that was before COVID. You know, with COVID, we probably don't have very very great attendance there this year. And moving forward, there's not a whole lot of optimism there as well. So what will the operating deficit be this year? And those are, you know, very crippling financial concerns in light of the major projects that the city needs that we just recently discussed. So that, too, is another issue that really needs to be addressed.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. George Prince for mayor.